Hello, listener. I would like to introduce you to Uji. Whoever you are, this is Uji. And Uji, if you could speak, I'd ask you to say hello, but you're just a text. So you have to do your thing when someone reads you. This particular podcast is mostly for people already familiar with the text, but nevertheless, I'm going to just start with the basics, as if you've never heard anything about Uji before. Uji is a word from the Japanese, and it's usually translated as time-being. Time being. Uji is the time being. Uji is a fascicle written in the 1200s in Japan. For those of you not familiar with the word fascicle, it's something written and published as a separate and independent piece, much like an essay might be published today. But at the same time, a fascicle is intended to be included inside of a larger body of work, intended, in effect, to be like a chapter in a book and part of a coherent whole. The book that this fascicle is a part of is called the Shobogenzo, which was written, as I said, in the 13th century by Eihei Dogen. An amazing, amazing teacher. Shobogenzo translates as the treasury of the true Dharma eye. If you want to know more about Dogen or the Shobogenzo, I'll put some links in the show notes. If you want to know more about the Dharma, you're going to have to study it for like 20 years, 30, 40 years. Then let's talk. I haven't read all of the Shobogenzo. I haven't even read most of the Shobogenzo, but I've read a few of the 95 fascicles in it. I don't think any part of the Shobogenzo is easy to understand or anything like that, but Uji is often considered one of the most difficult of Dogen's writings to grasp. In some ways, it's the most dense, the most abstract, but I want to tell you why I think this text is so valuable. It's so worth the effort. Uji is valuable because you just don't get many clear descriptions of what time actually is, of how we don't exist in time, we exist as time. It's so easy to get wrapped up in how everything is separate from time. Like I said, most people, including me, experience life as if we exist in time. This is true, in a way, as far as it goes, but saying we exist in time can only go so far. What if you want to explore farther? What I've done is I've picked two short sections of Uji, and I will read them out loud to you. Especially if this is your first time hearing anything like this, you'll see how hard it is to understand. Then I want to take a kind of a journey of sorts. The journey will start with me introducing an idea I heard that has been incredibly useful to me in my own life and for how I make sense of things. As we journey with this idea, I'll develop some language around the concepts, and then eventually, at the end of the journey and the end of this episode, we get back to Uji. When we encounter Uji again, after the roundabout journey, I'll conclude the episode by rereading the same two short sections I start with, and you can see how they land with you then. Introducing Uji. That's what I want to talk about today. Hello, and welcome to the 10 Crutches podcast. My name is David. I'm glad you're here. So here are the two quotes that I promised I would read you. You may suppose that time is only passing away and not understand that time never arrives. Although understanding itself is time, understanding does not depend on its own arrival. People only see time's coming and going, and do not thoroughly understand that the time being abides in each moment. This being so, when can they penetrate the barrier? Here's the second quote. The time being is like this. Arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving, but not by arriving. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. Words overwhelm words and see words. Overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming and sees overwhelming. Overwhelming is nothing but overwhelming. This is time. As overwhelming is caused by you, there is no overwhelming that is separate from you. Thus, you go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these are not the actualization of time, they cannot be thus. Okay, back to me just talking. I would consider it a good idea now, if you can, to pause this episode 29 and go to the show notes at 10crutches.link. You'll find the show notes for episode 29 in the archive. I put three translations of Uji in the show notes. Pick one at random and perhaps read it through once or maybe just glance through it and then come back and resume listening to the podcast. Are you back? Did you never leave and figure, well, you'll just go get a copy of Uji if you want to when you're good and ready? Well, the idea was for you to have Uji right there with you. So when the episode is over and the introduction between you and Uji is complete, you'll be able to take a look and see how the whole thing reads then. Don't expect too much too soon, particularly if you've never heard it before. It can take years, nay, decades of study for this text to reveal even a sliver of its truth. So, onward with our journey. I'm going to imagine us walking down a quiet path in the woods on a warm, clear day, hearing leaves on the path crunching as we walk along, lots of trees around, blue sky visible through the branches and the leaves. But please feel free to imagine whatever works for you. If you'd rather be down by the beach, totally get it. The idea that I want to, let's say, take out of my backpack and share with you is an idea I got from a book called Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. I'll put a link to Sapiens in the show notes as well. Harari's book is sometimes called a meta-history, meaning his history doesn't focus on particular dates and particular events, but he's trying to look at larger trends, larger quote-unquote moments in human history, like a moment like the beginning of agriculture, to see how we Homo sapiens got where we are today. Near the beginning of the book, one of the questions he asks to start off with is, what makes humans different from all the other creatures on Earth? Many might say our ability to speak and write and use language, that's what separates us from all other creatures. But Harari says many creatures can communicate. In effect, they use language, from bees passing along information about where the good flowers are, wolves hunting together in a pack, they communicate, whales and dolphins communicate with the sounds that they make. So perhaps you can say humans are more sophisticated in using language than other creatures, but the language itself isn't what makes us different. What Harari says makes us unique as humans is that we can create an imaginary reality that we then experience and treat as a real reality. I'm going to say that again. humans can create an imaginary reality that we then experience and treat as if it's real. This allows us to cooperate in very, very large numbers with great flexibility. For example, let's use one of the states of the United States. Since I lived in New York for so many years, I'm going to use New York. New York has a pretty odd shape, as many states do, and you can trace the history if you're interested in how it got that way. But I will guess, with even a moment's reflection, you can agree that New York State, whatever New York State is, New York State is completely made up by human beings. There is no New York State without human beings. Squirrels climbing trees near the New York and Pennsylvania border do not know where is the tree that they are climbing up. Hey, Sammy, what kind of New York squirrel are you, man? You went over to a Pennsylvania tree. No, doesn't happen. The clouds that pass over the land, the rain that falls on the land, etc., etc. Only humans know anything at all about New York State. But look at how this fictional idea, this idea of New York State, is real. If you ask people in New York State where they live, only a very few weird hippies will say, oh, the universe is my home. Everyone else will say they live in New York. People don't live on New York. They don't live with New York. They live in New York. And all the rest of the world lives somewhere else. And look at how it allows millions of people to, let's call it, cooperate. Let's say, for example, you have a machine called a car, and you want people to be able to drive these machines all around on the roads inside your imaginary state. Well, you're going to need to collect taxes to build and maintain the roads. You're going to have to buy and install stop signs and traffic lights. And you got to make up some rules for driving and then enforce them and even choose which side of the road everyone's going to drive on. You may want to ensure that all the drivers have at least some training before they start driving around. So you make a rule. You say New York State requires, as if there's an actual thing requiring. New York State requires all drivers to take a test before they can have permission to drive. And so now millions of people have permission to drive and they have a license from the fictional idea of New York State that we all make up without being quite so conscious of how do we make it up and how do we maintain its reality. And so, as I mentioned, within the imaginary line of what we call New York State, trees grow on the land, squirrels jump from tree to tree, you get your dirt, your grass, rocks, clouds, the buildings that humans have built, the roads, anything that's non-human doesn't know anything about New York State. So hopefully that's clear. And hopefully you can see that calling New York imaginary makes some sense, while at the same time, calling it real also makes some sense. When you are in New York, you're really in New York. You're not in the imaginary Massachusetts or the imaginary New Jersey, etc. So I came to call this kind of human invention an imaginary reality. An imaginary reality is totally made up, but since we all tend to forget it and treat it as real, it kind of becomes real. So now we all have the truth of our imaginary reality. We all, whether you live there or not, we all have a New York State. Manhattan, another imaginary reality. If you go back to when the Lenape Indians were living on the same land before any Europeans came over, the Lenape called that land Manahata, which means hilly island. If you go back 25,000 years or so, the same piece of land had a mile of solid ice covering it. No humans had yet been there, as far as we know. So there was only reality on that land. No imaginary reality had come there yet. For me, the main thing to note about human imaginary reality is that it's always related to what I could call real reality, or maybe shared reality. I tend not to use shared reality because in our culture, we are so human-centric. Many people hearing the words shared reality would think of the sharing that happens between humans. No. That's the imaginary reality. That's what we share. If I were going to use shared reality, I would mean the reality humans share with all the rest of the universe, all of it. The rocks and trees and clouds, fish, plants, animals, molecules, protons, stars, planets. This is the real reality we humans share. Just as a by the way, there's one episode, number 20, called Getting Your Head Out of Your Butt. Please listen to it if you think a shared reality is only shared between humans. So while considering what to call this reality that extends beyond, like way beyond, our human-constructed imaginary reality, but it also includes us humans and everything we're doing, I decided to call it the total reality. Because it's not only the grasses and the trees and the buildings and the roads that physically exist, and it's not only the atoms, the cells of every plant and animal, the sun shining down, and on and on and on. The whole interconnected total reality exists beyond our little imaginary reality and includes our little imaginary reality, our construction of New York State. So now we have a little bit of language. We have human reality or imaginary reality or constructed reality, and we can contrast that with total reality, the quote-unquote real reality, and that points to everything. So let's take this language someplace else. Let's take it because once you see the difference, you begin to see it everywhere. So we'll look briefly at money. The human-created imaginary reality of money is such that if you put a $100 bill on the ground and a $1 bill on the ground right next to it, and then ask somebody, why don't you pick up only one of those bills? Most people are going to pick up the $100 bill. It seems so obvious to do that because within the imaginary reality, which is where we use the money, a $100 bill has more value, or it's worth more than a $1 bill. And that's so obvious, but it's obvious only within the imaginary reality. If you put those same two bills on the ground, a $100 and a $1 bill, put them in front of a squirrel, and the squirrel needs some lining for their nest, I don't know which one they would take, and I'm not sure the squirrel would know the difference either. But it seems to be clear that the squirrel won't think one of those little rectangles of paper has more value than the other. The wind blowing those two bills tumbling over the ground, the wind doesn't care which one is which. The tree that the two bills blow up against doesn't care which is which. The clouds passing overhead, the planet Jupiter. I think you get the point. We live in a vast universe, and most of the universe does not know the difference between a $100 bill and a $1 bill and couldn't care less. It's only us humans that see the difference between these two. Both pieces of paper are real with real ink printing on them, and they both have different symbols, kind of the same but different writing. The two rectangular pieces of paper are very much a part of total reality. Everything we humans think about their value, any fights we might have with anyone about who wants to take our very important piece of paper, well, that's part of total reality as well. But you would only fight over the bill within an imaginary human reality. Once I saw this distinction, I found myself looking over and over at what I had thought was the world. I thought it was reality. But with this lens, I'm able to distinguish the difference between our human-created, imaginary, cultural world and what I'm now calling the total reality. So I want to take one more example, washing the dishes. This is a very simple and kind of neutral example, but I think you can see how subtle this idea can get. As far as total reality goes, you and the dishes and the soapy water are all participating in this activity, washing the dishes. No question about that. The words washing the dishes are a good enough name for the whole stream of activities that comprise this activity. But even the word dish starts to veer into imaginary reality. We made up that name. Washing a dish is a general name for picking up the dish, picking up the sponge, wetting the surface of the dish, cleaning the surface of the dish by rubbing the sponge over it, rinsing off the soapy water from the dish. Washing the dish is an abstraction. It's the name for all these little series of activities. But then you can even go further. What are the actual sensations? What are the actual movements? What's the actual experience of washing the dishes that goes beyond any name? If you think about it, everything you do is done within the total reality. There's no place else to do it. Where else can you be but inside the universe? But everything we name, every distinction we can point to, every word we utter occurs, at least somewhat, in imaginary reality. So now we're ready with this distinction. We're ready to follow the trail we've been meandering down. Let's keep walking through the woods, moving down the path, and let's come to a clearing where we can encounter the subject of time. When I think about time, what I see for most humans is that once you've learned about your culture's time, you just simply live inside human-created time. That's the training. That's where all of our experience will be. Infants, most small children, they don't yet live in imaginary time, and that's partly why we look at them as being so free. Some of our elders, particularly if you have some form of dementia, may no longer live in imaginary time as well. I include myself in this. Most anyone listening to this podcast will likely be living most of their life in imaginary time and think that this is the reality of time. This is how it is. And look no further. For example, just like we live in New York State, we live in, quote unquote, in a year. What does that even mean, to live in a year? What year are we in? Why do we live in a year? Why do we live in a month, but we meet someone on Tuesday? Have you ever lived in a Tuesday? Our constructions can get very weird when you really look at them. Ask anyone what year it is. Ask anyone, and people will tell you what year it is. And really, it is that year. It's imaginary, but it's reality. Talk about cooperation. Billions of people know what year it is. Everyone knows the number of the year, and we use these numbers to keep track of the days and weeks and months so that any particular moment can be identified as distinct, as unique. Are all days the same? Well, every day is today, when it is. They are all the same that way. If you ask what day it is, we humans have created a system where the answer can only be one of 7 days. Today is either Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, etc., you know. But if you really look around, if you just really look around and think about what day it is, try it as you listen to this. Look around. You will be very hard-pressed to find anything in the actual total reality that tells you what day it is. You come to realize that what makes a day a Tuesday is that yesterday was Monday and tomorrow is Wednesday. We are making it all up. You know what else we make up? We take a day and we do some more dividing, and then we get hours, we get minutes, we get seconds. We get so lost in our counting. We get so lost in the human-created imaginary reality of time. It's as if total reality itself is these chunks of time. It's as if we're actually living in a kind of chunky time, and we experience life as a move from one chunky moment to another chunky moment to another. And then, but that's, it's only imaginary time that has chunks in it. The fact that we can feel time as broken up is a human invented artifact. Here's another thing we humans create about time. You may think of your future as being in front of you. You know how somebody might say to a high school or a college graduate, young graduate, you have your whole future ahead of you. And you might tell people who are troubled by something that happened in their past, well, just try to put it all behind you, as if the past is somewhere behind you. I can guarantee 100%, if you look around right now, look behind you, you will see something. I don't know where you are. I don't know what you're going to see. But something is behind you, some wall or some bench or I don't know what, but it's not your past. Just look and see. The experience of imaginary time with the future in front and the past behind can lead us to the feeling that life is like, it's like happening on a railroad track. Your consciousness itself can feel kind of like you're a railroad car, you're in a railroad car, so that at any now moment that you are in, any now moment is moving away from the past and moving toward the future. This is strictly human created, to have a present that moves from the past and towards the future. It's as if we all experience reality itself moving that way. But the more you look, the more you will see how steeped we are in this human-created imaginary reality of time, how much of our life and our experience happens in human-created time. Once you feel how pervasive our experience of imaginary reality time is, you can start to maybe get a sense that you might want to ask a question. The question is, what is time beyond our human constructions of time? What is time for the total reality of the universe? Human-created time makes it hard to imagine what time might be beyond our imagination. Our imaginary time informs some of our most basic experiences of the world. This imaginary movement from the past towards the future, or imaginary division of time into chunks, this human obsession with counting and labeling time, making you always feel like you're in a particular moment that has never existed before. There's truth in that. But it's not unique in that it has a certain number or a certain label. Well, all of this makes it very hard to experience the real reality of time. In the time of the total reality, all things are happening together. There isn't anything that can be left out of an actual now. The time that's shared by all the universe, this real reality of time, how could you possibly describe it with human words? How can our little words, our little puffs of breath and sound, How can you find some way of describing the time that is shared by clouds and trees and a gentle breeze? A tornado? The time that's shared by war and peace? And by stars swirling in a galaxy, by a baby, by you and all the other humans, the ground we walk on, the buildings we've made, the rocks, the ants under the soil, the planets, subatomic particles, all the universe. How can our words describe the time we are all sharing? So many words grow out of our immersion in imaginary time. Just the fact that our verbs have past, present, future. We can even say things like, by next Tuesday, I will have done such and such. And oh God, how can the little scratchy symbols that we write on pieces of paper and type into computer screens, how can we use words to describe the time of our total reality? And what would we be describing? Well, the amazing Ehei Dogen, the guy who wrote Uji in the 1200s, he took a stab at it. And now we have the fascicle Uji. We have Dogen's attempt to describe the reality of time beyond human constructions. As I read Uji to you again, I will invite you as best as you can to let go of imaginary time. As best as you can, let go of hours, minutes, days, the numbers we assign to years, the tenses of the verbs, even the ordinary meanings of words. Let go of today's date and the time of day. Imaginary human-created time will still be here whenever you need it. It's hard to recognize how deeply attached we are to our human co-creation of time, to our human fantasy of knowing where we are in time. We are so attached to human time, we actually think human time is independent of us humans. We actually think the squirrels and the trees and the clouds exist within our time, as if the squirrel is alive in this year and lives in New York State, but it's just not true. If you do try to read Dogen, and you do try to have some experience with Uji, remember, keep letting go of the human-created time. If you find yourself thinking, oh, well, I didn't understand it today, but maybe I'll understand more tomorrow. Well, I think then you're missing the point. There is no tomorrow when you will understand Uji. There's no moment of human-created time to study Uji in. The only place to read Uji is in total reality. I'm going to end now by reading again what I read at the beginning of our journey. After I'm done reading, I'm going to leave a full minute of silence before the outro plays. Okay, I'm going to leave you in Dogen's very competent hands. You may suppose that time is only passing away and never understand that time never arrives. Although understanding itself is time, understanding does not depend on its own arrival. People only see times coming and going and do not thoroughly understand that the time a being abides in each moment. This being so, when? When can they penetrate the barrier? The time being is like this. Arriving is overwhelmed by arriving, but not by not arriving. Not arriving is overwhelmed by not arriving, but not by arriving. Mind overwhelms mind and sees mind. Words overwhelm words and see words. Overwhelming overwhelms overwhelming and sees overwhelming. Overwhelming is nothing but overwhelming. This is time. As overwhelming is caused by you, there is no overwhelming that is separate from you. Thus, you go out and meet someone. Someone meets someone. You meet yourself. Going out meets going out. If these are not the actualization of time, they cannot be thus. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time. Please visit the home of the 10 Crutches podcast at 10crutches.link. That's 10crutches.link. The book that inspired the podcast, a book I wrote called 10 Crutches for Walking in the Present, is available for free download on the website. While you are there, please take advantage of two ways to contact me. You can send me an email, or you can make a voice recording. If you have a great question, I may be able to use it for the podcast. Also on the website, you can visit the archive to hear any published episode and see show notes for any and every show. Thanks so much for listening, and once again, thanks so much for listening, and I won't say it once again. See you next time.